Thank you very much. So it's a pleasure to be here and to present my work. So the title of my talk is Non-Invertible Symmetry, Duality, and Anomalies. Let me quickly present some references. So the talk will be based mostly on these papers, these five papers that I wrote over the last couple years. And I'd in particular like to highlight the key role played by some junior collaborators who don't yet have faculty positions. So there are students, Ichil Choi and Anu Japte, and then there are postdocs, Ho-Tat Lam and Carolyn Zhang. And of course, there are key papers by others. And I won't have time to do them all justice. Okay, so we're going to start with non-invertible symmetry. What is non-invertible symmetry? Non-invertible symmetry is a non-invertible symmetry is a generalization of the notion of symmetry that's beyond groups. And so it's an algebraic generalization of symmetry. Usually we think that, and here as well, symmetries are characterized by commuting with the Hamiltonian. And the modern view on that is that they are topological operators. So topological operator O of sigma is something you can place somewhere on some manifold sigma in space-time, and you can wiggle its support, and nothing will change in the correlation functions. And this is supposed to generalize the notion of current conservation. And these are typically represented by unitary matrices with invertible or group-like fusions. So usually you have some labels, H, G, et cetera. Those are taking values in a group, and when you collide them, you get the group product. And the main development in the last few years is that we've seen new kinds of algebraic structures play an important role in quantum field theory. So in these new kinds of algebraic structures, we don't commit a priori to what the fusion algebra of the symmetries will be. We can collide two of them, and we get others. And the only constraint is that all the operators here are topological. So in particular, a general symmetry, a general operator that will occur here, is a topological operator with no inverse, and is thus called non-invertible. Okay, this is really becoming a problem. I'll just stand here. So one class of examples we heard about already are examples arising from self-duality. So typically, when you have duality in quantum field theory, it's a relation between different values of the coupling constants, gives you, or maybe different classical limits of the same quantum system. But there are special cases where one can have a self-duality. So that's a fixed point under some identification. And then the fixed point will have additional symmetry. And often that additional symmetry will be non-invertible. So here are some simple examples. So we heard in the previous talk a little bit about Kramers-Vanier's self-duality of the 2D critical Ising model, and that leads to some particular non-invertible symmetry of that system. There's also electromagnetic self-duality of 4D Maxwell theory at special couplings. And for most of the first part of the talk, I'll tell you about this particular example, which is really the simplest example of non-invertible symmetry in four space-time dimensions. Finally, to give an interacting example, there's n equals 4 super Yang-Mills. This has SL2Z duality, and if we sit at tau equals I, this fixed point under S, that theory also has a non-invertible symmetry. Okay, so let's talk now about the simplest example, self-duality in electromagnetism. I don't know why this is happening. So we're talking about U1 gauge theory, free U1 gauge theory to start. This is Maxwell theory. It has two U1 one-form global symmetries that act on lines, commonly called the electric and magnetic one-form global symmetries. And to probe this symmetry, it's useful to couple to background gauge fields. So we call them BE and BM. Since these are one-form global symmetries, the background gauge fields are two forms. That's what the superscript means. And this is the action for Maxwell theory coupled to these background fields. Now, interestingly, these two one-form symmetries have a mixed anomaly. And the mixed anomaly is characterized by this 5D Chern-Simons term, this inflow term. And what this anomaly means is that we cannot simultaneously gauge, that we cannot simultaneously sum over BE and BM. That's what this anomaly means. Now, something special happens if we restrict our attention to subgroups. So instead of studying the general U1 times U1 one-form symmetry, let's look at a subgroup, ZNE times ZNM. So NE and NM are some natural numbers, and I'll choose them to be co-prime. So their greatest common divisor is 1. What's the significance of this condition? The significance is that in that special circumstance, that mixed anomaly vanishes. Therefore, you can sum over background fields for this discrete one-form symmetry. Now, the action that I presented on the previous slide was quadratic, so that sum is very easy to do. It just gives you a restriction on the flux. So before summing, the integrated flux over any two-cycle was an integer. And after summing, we get that it's an integer multiple of this particular rational number. So the sum over NE, over ZNE gave us fractional fluxes, and the sum over ZNM constrained the numerator. Now, this is just a constrained Maxwell theory with constrained fluxes, so we could undo that constraint by rescaling the gauge field. And so doing that, we can see that this gauging is equivalent to an action on the coupling constant. So in summary, gauging this product of one-form symmetry groups just changes the electric coupling E to a rational multiple. Okay. Now we can combine that operation with S-duality. So S-duality famously inverts the coupling. So E squared over 2 pi is inverted, and F is mapped to star F. If we look at the composite operation of electromagnetic duality and gauging this product one-form symmetry, we see that it has fixed points at rational values of the coupling. So an E squared over 2 pi is any rational. And therefore, at this coupling, Maxwell theory has new symmetries. And these will be non-invertible symmetries, which we will analyze in the next few slides. Now, in nature, in the standard model, at long distances, we have a Maxwell sector. And presumably, the fine structure constant of that theory is irrational. However, we could look at the fine structure constant, and we could truncate it to some fixed precision. And if we do that, the symmetries, or topological operators, that we will construct will be approximate symmetries of the long distance of our world. So for instance, taking nm is 2 and n equals 137 yields a nearly topological operator. And here, what I mean by a nearly topological operator is that the stress tensor is nearly continuous as we cross the defect. Now, these are accidental symmetries. They are broken by the coupling to charged matter, by leptons and quarks, and they're approximate below the mass scale of these species. Now, if we want to understand what is going to happen, what are the consequences of this symmetry, we need to investigate the symmetry defect. So we need, in particular, the defect world volume action. Now, it's clear intuitively what we want, in fact. So intuitively, the defect just divides space-time into two sides. On one side, there's a bulk gauge field A left. On the other side, a bulk gauge field A right. And we would like to write a Trin-Simons term for the world volume theory of this defect that is a mixed Trin-Simons term for these two bulk gauge fields with a fractional level, NE over NM. Now, that, of course, does not make sense. NE over NM is not an integer. If you want to make sense of that, we should think of it as a response that came from illegally integrating out some fields that live on the defect. So what are these fields? They're going to be some new U1 gauge fields, little a and little b. And the correct defect action for this symmetry that I'm talking about is this. So let's analyze this in a little more detail. So this term here, this nm over 2 pi adb, tells us that the defect has a ZNM topological gauge theory living on its world volume. And then this topological gauge theory is coupled to the left and right bulk gauge fields through its one-form symmetry. So for instance, if we were doing this in the leading approximation to the fine structure constant, we would be talking about a Z2 gauge theory on the world volume, so a toric code. Now, we'd like to understand, how does this symmetry act on operators? So the defect D is topological. And what we do is we push it until it hits an operator, and we see what happens when they cross. Kind of like a Ward identity. So on local operators, this is completely dictated by electromagnetic duality. This gauging of the one-form symmetry that I introduced doesn't play any role. So for instance, when D crosses F, you just get star F. However, on extended operators, this action is richer. So for instance, if I sweep D past a line operator, that is a dion, the world line of a heavy dion, the charge fractionalizes. Now, I've drawn that pictorially here. So here, this is the duality defect D. This is the world line of the heavy dion. And what happens when I cross this world line is that it attaches with a topological surface. That's the charge fractionalization. So I've written the action on charges here, D on QE, QM, the electrically magnetic charges. It swaps them. That part you can anticipate from S duality, but also rescales them by rational numbers. So that's the fractionalization. You could think of this as a higher version of the order-disorder map in Cramer's Wannier duality in the Ising model. So this is ubiquitous for non-invertible symmetries. Now, I kept asserting that these defects are non-invertible. To bear that out, we should inspect the fusion rules. So we should collide D, the duality defect, with D dagger. If D were unitary, we would expect to just get one. And in fact, acting on local operators, we do get one. But more generally, we get something richer. So D times D dagger has the following interesting expression. So it's a sum over surfaces in the world volume of this defect of the one-form symmetry operators, UE and UM. So those U's were the generators of this electric and magnetic one-form symmetry. So we're summing over all possible surfaces. I've drawn that pictorially here. So D and D dagger fuse, and they make this object C, which is this sum. Now, since D times D dagger acts as 1 on local operators, you could think of C as porous. So a local operator can just transit through it. That's why I've drawn this fine mesh. So it's a sum of surfaces. And this kind of object is called a condensation operator. So again, it's trivial on local operators, but it can annihilate extended operators. That's the non-invertibility. Now, we can also investigate the action of these symmetries on boundary conditions. How does that work? So here we can have a space-time with some boundary condition B. So here's the boundary. And here is the duality defect D. And D is topological, so we try to move it towards B. And when they collide, we get a new boundary condition here, D times B. And AL, the gauge field that existed in this slab region, now becomes a new 3D gauge field that lives in this new boundary condition. So we could do this for a very familiar example. So for instance, if B is an electric conductor, that is a boundary condition where F restricts to be 0, or standard Dirichlet boundary conditions, then the defect acting on it will be a magnetic conductor, that is a Neumann boundary condition where star F is 0. That part is kind of obvious from the electromagnetic duality. But the non-trivial part is that there will be, in addition, a boundary ZNM gauge theory, which will couple to the bulk gauge fields after in this new boundary condition. You can use this to investigate Hilbert spaces. So this symmetry, like any symmetry, relates energy levels and degeneracies. And this is a non-trivial statement if we set up the problem to have some topology. If the problem has some topology, then the energies in Maxwell theory depend on the coupling. And this symmetry existed only for special values of the coupling. So here I've written sort of a very simple example of that. So let's consider a toroidal cavity. What's a toroidal cavity? So it's a solid torus. And at the edge of the solid torus, I have some boundary B. And inside this solid torus, I'll insert some one-form symmetry defect. So it's on a one cycle inside the solid torus, and it extends along time. So that's a two-manifold, a surface operator. Now, I can use the fusion algebras to analyze this. So what I can do is, using the fusion algebra, I can nucleate here a little duality defect. I can trade this C for this duality defect. Now it's on a very thin torus inside the solid torus. And then I can let this duality defect grow in radius until it collides with the boundary and gives me a new boundary condition. And so here what we'll have is an equivalence between these two Hilbert spaces. So here, this is the Hilbert space with just some fixed boundary condition, D times B. And this is a Hilbert space with a different boundary condition, B, and some operator inserted. And so you could ask pragmatically, what does this look like? If you cut the torus, you have a disk here with some point piercing it, and there's some fractional flux on this disk from this piercing. And states that look like that get traded for states carrying momentum of the holonomy around the non-contractible cycle here. Now you could ask, in this story, what was the role of this boundary gauge theory? Well, the role is that the, for instance, over here, the boundary anion states, the state that they're in fixes the effective theta angle seen by this holonomy variable. So that's how this TQ of T plays a central role. Okay, so that's all I wanted to tell you about the simplest example of non-invertible symmetry. And now I'd like to tell you something about some dynamical consequences. So if we want to talk about dynamical consequences, we want to study RG flows that have duality symmetry. So non-invertible symmetry will constrain dynamics in situations where the ultraviolet also has this D. Then the RG flow preserves D and any associated invariants, like anomalies, for instance. So one example is a Zn lattice gauge theory. So in four space-time dimensions. And at special coupling, this theory is invariant under self-duality. That is, it is invariant under gauging its electric Zn1 one-form symmetry. So here I've drawn a phase diagram illustrating that. So here the horizontal axis is coupling, and the vertical axis is n, the n labeling the Zn. For small n, this theory has a first-order transition between a trivial vacuum and a Zn TQFT. This transition occurs at the self-dual coupling. And for large n, there's a gapless window, and the theory at the self-dual coupling is in a Coulomb phase. And we can even use the symmetry that we discussed before to identify the coupling in this Coulomb phase. Namely, it's going to be e squared over 2 pi is 1 over n. That's just from matching the symmetry. Now, we could try to organize our thoughts about that RG flow from the viewpoint of symmetry, incorporating the duality as just an ordinary kind of symmetry. So the first order transition, we could think it's governed by spontaneously breaking the duality symmetry. And what that means is that the Higgs and confining phases that we found differ by gauging the Zn one-form symmetry. So that's spontaneous breaking of the invariance under gauging. What about the Coulomb phase? Well, the vacuum there, it preserves the symmetry D. And that means that the particle spectrum, for instance, is in representations of D. So for instance, there are massive magnetic monopoles and charge and electrons of equal mass. That's one consequence of the duality symmetry. Now, more generally, we'd like to constrain possible phases of quantum field theory with non-invertible symmetry. And beyond gapless and spontaneous symmetry breaking phases, we could also contemplate symmetry preserving gapped phases, that is, topological quantum field theories that carry the symmetry. And it's interesting to try to study which of these things are allowed for various symmetry types. So let's again look at this duality symmetry for NE equals N, general, but NM equals 1. So we'll focus on a particular class. And then one finds a very interesting number theoretic constraint. So a trivially gapped phase, realizing this symmetry type, is possible only if N is Pythagorean. That is, minus 1 is a quadratic residue modulo N. That condition was famously solved by Gauss. It means that n is at most one factor of 2 times the product of primes that are all 1 modulo 4. What about a symmetry preserving gap phase? That's a little bit easier. Now n can be a perfect square times a Pythagorean number. So here I've I've written sort of the allowed n for small n for the two different types. So here the SPT is the invertible phase, n can take these values. And the TQFT, the additional possibilities are listed here. So this is, if you like, the first hint of an anomaly of a non-invertible symmetry, some general constraint. Now, how can you argue for such sophisticated things? Where do those number theoretic constraints come from? Well, one way to do it is to look at the physics of the duality defect, its world volume theory, more carefully. So if the bulk is invertible, that is trivially gapped, we're trying to understand this situation, then D will be a well-defined 3D TQFT on its own. So there's nothing in the bulk, there's just this D. What do we know about it? Well, it's going to be a 3D theory with Zn one-form symmetry, and is in fact described by a so-called minimal abelian TQFT. What's a minimal abelian TQFT? Well, it's just the theory of this one-form symmetry, essentially. So there's Zn abelian anions, so there's a generating line L, and L to the n is 1. And those are all the lines. And the spins are characterized by a single integer p, according to this formula. So here's the picture. Here's the minimal abelian TQFT that lives on D. And the two sides differ by gauging and are both invertible. Now, let's try to understand that picture more carefully. There are two operations that we can do. The first is that I can gauge the Zn one-form symmetry everywhere. So that has the effect of swapping the two sides here. The second thing I can do is a rotation by pi. A rotation by pi in Euclidean signature is just another name for a CPT transformation. Now, if I do that, the two sides come back to themselves, except that D has reversed orientation. That's what I've drawn by tracking this arrow here. What this means is that the duality defect has a time reversal symmetry. This is true even though the bulk problem that we started with did not have time reversal symmetry. The defect world volume has a time reversal symmetry. And so it's a minimal abelian theory with a time reversal symmetry obeying this algebra. T squared is charge conjugation. That charge conjugation comes ultimately from the fact that S duality squared is charge conjugation. And this kind of situation is only possible for a minimal abelian TQFT if n is Pythagorean. So that's one way to get this interesting number theoretic constraint on n as an anomaly. What about the gapped symmetry preserving phases? Well, they can be similarly constrained. Let me just give you one kind of example of how that works. So we want a unique local operator so that there's a unique local ground state. That's the situation we're studying. We don't want any spontaneous symmetry breaking. And for instance, if I let n be a perfect square, one kind of theory that can do that, that can carry this D symmetry, is a ZK topological gauge theory. And the action for this Zn one-form symmetry coupled to the ZK topological theory is here. So this is the ZK sector, and this is the coupling to the background. This is invariant under gauging B. Roughly speaking, you could think that since n is k squared, gauging zk kills the zk theory, and gauging another factor of zk brings it back. That's the invariance. That's how the self-duality works. And more generally, you can prove that this kind of structure can only happen for a TQFT if n satisfies this number theoretic constraint. Okay, so what we're dancing around here is the subject of anomalies of non-invertible symmetry. This is a frontier of progress. And for standard, that is, invertible symmetries, there exists a well-known paradigm to understand this. It's called anomaly inflow. So we think about our d-dimensional spacetime, n, as the boundary of something in one dimension higher. I call it w. And all the background fields in global symmetry, we extend from n into w. And on w, this bulk, there is a classical invertible theory. This is the anomaly theory. You could think of it as like a generalization of Chern-Simons theory, something more sophisticated than that in general. And the anomaly is inert. That is, we have Tuft anomaly matching because all dynamics are really on n. This w is completely classical. What's the picture for non-invertible symmetries? Well, for non-invertible symmetries, the theory on this bulk w is upgraded to a non-trivial TQFT. And given this TQFT, we want to study what possible boundaries can exist. So what kinds of phases can be on the boundary? That's the study of the anomaly. So an obstruction to an invertible, trivially gapped boundary, that is a completely trivial boundary, that we would call an anomaly of a non-invertible symmetry. Now that's an interesting thing to study in general, but if space-time is two-dimensional, this is essentially now a solved problem. And the idea here is that the symmetry is described by a fusion category, A. That's a well-known mathematical structure. And the associated topological field theory, it's kind of the anomaly theory living in the bulk, is the Drinfeld center, Z of A. And anomalies are then obstructions to the existence of certain kinds of Lagrangian algebras. So there's a very well-posed problem to classify all anomalies in that sense. So the generalization to higher D involves higher fusion categories in TQFTs and is still in progress. Okay, so I'm almost out of time. Let me conclude. I hope I convinced you, you know, to take away one thing or two things, really, which is that non-invertible symmetries occur in many real QFTs. It's not just some fancy algebraic structure that mathematically could be possible. It actually is there in real gauge theories, real systems that we're already studying, just not really well understood so far. And these symmetries imply selection rules, and their anomalies constrain our G flows. So they're really doing the same thing that other symmetries are doing, so you better pay attention to them. What are some future topics? Well, one point is that the full scope of non-invertible symmetry is unclear. So by that I mean which models have them. That's a tricky question right now. We don't really have a complete understanding of that. There's no sort of widget where you look at the Lagrangian and you decide whether there's a non-invertible symmetry or not. Another thing we would like to know is a complete characterization of the anomalies, not just in 2D, but in higher D. If we can do that, then we can really start to milk the power of higher symmetry and non-invertible symmetry for normalization group flows. And finally, let me just throw this out there. I didn't talk about it at all, but there are some papers asking interesting questions about whether non-invertible symmetries can be useful for potentially explaining small numbers in nature. If you have a new kind of symmetry, maybe it gives you a new explanation for certain hierarchies. That's very optimistic, but people are looking into it. Thank you very much.
All right, any questions?
Hi, thanks for the nice talk. So how do you know that the TQFT living on the non-invertible symmetry operator is the minimal theory and not, for example, like the thing that Inyaki and Iqbal construct where they basically do the same trick for the ABJ anomaly but with a compact scalar coupled to the bulk A.
So that compact scalar example, it's a bit technical, the answer, but I think that example does not have a finite quantum dimension. So the example that I'm discussing here are sort of standard TQFTs with finite quantum dimension.
I see. And I was, I guess, also going to ask a related question on what goes wrong for irrational values where you have, you know, this sort of
That's an excellent question.
Yes, that's, I guess.
Yeah, so the question is, I told you about a symmetry that exists in Maxwell theory for rational values of the coupling. What about irrational coupling?
Uh-huh.
Actually, you can formally write, and we do write, symmetry defects in that case. And the only difference is that the world volume of them would be described by infinitely many anions.
Right.
But there are well-defined TQFTs. They just violate one of the standard axioms in that they have infinitely many anion types. But you can write them.
Shuhan, how's your question?
Okay, hi Clay, thanks for the nice talk. So when you talk about the Maxwell theory, I assume you assume the theta angle vanishes. On the other hand, the non-invertible symmetry depends very sensitively on the value of the theta angle. For the real world, we don't know the value of the U1 theta angle because we haven't found the monopole. So I was wondering, is it really fair to say that we have the symmetries you describe are approximate symmetries of the nature, given that we don't know the U1 theta angle value for the real world?
That's a fair question. Indeed, we do not know the value of the theta angle for the real world. Let me just say that that slide is meant to be a bit tongue-in-cheek, but it would still be a symmetry on various sectors. So I think you would still have some relations among energy levels independent of the theta value. We can talk about that more, actually. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the clear talk. I'm not surprised by it. For ordinary symmetries, if the symmetry is not exact, we could still get some stuff out of it by considering it as an approximation to the case where the symmetry is exact. Is there a similar perturbation theory around the symmetric point here? Or is the non-invertible symmetry completely gone?
No, I think there is a similar perturbation theory. So the stress tensor would be not exactly continuous across the defect. And so, for instance, the kind of energy, like if E squared over 2 pi was not rational, but was taken to be near some rational number, then I think the states would have close to equal energy, where you could quantify that by the change in the energy momentum tensor across the defect.
Thank you.
All right, any more questions? Okay, otherwise, let's answer the question.